As I got another rhyme, another rhythm for y'all to listen. I'm never quitting on my mission, I'ma roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you going, better go in the right direction. In the moment you stressing, but you gon' be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains. Haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, lights, camera, action, I'm ready to go. I'm never gonna give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Yeah, this is my road, lights, camera, action, I'm ready to go.
You're listening to the Tom Thigpen Show on WNHH LP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio.
Harry, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's good for a Monday morning. I was asking you, Harry, how you felt, and you said it's Monday. It is a Monday, but it's a every day is a blessing and a present, and that literally is true. And I have Johnny Eric Williams here with me, professor of sociology at Trinity College, and Jesse Turner. I'm gonna come up with a different name. I know you have the Jesse Walking Man Turner, but I'm gonna come up with another moniker for you for this show. And Jesse's been here and really kind of a co-conspirator, colleague. We may be cellmates at some point, and if so, just come in and say visit us, and bring some bread or cake with something that we can a key to unlock our liberation. And we're talking about how can we unlock our liberation, and not in terms of how that word just has kind of been floated around for 200-300 years, but it's a reality, and people are perceiving what this social justice movement, what does living healthily and holy and really just being able to sustain ourselves in terms of our body and mind and spirit. So Johnny is with us, professor of sociology at Trinity. Jesse's here, and professor at Central Connecticut State University. We're going to talk not necessarily about these three books. There's something called Hitler's American Model, which is a great book that I like. There's a book called Stamp from the Beginning that I really love. And Frederick Douglass, there's a recent book, David Blight at Yale gets released on Frederick Douglass. So be it Frederick Douglass, be it Hitler, be it American Jim Crow, be it Stamp from the Beginning. We have Johnny here, Johnny Eric Williams, and Jesse Turner to kind of bring these, to take these books off the shelf, because Johnny has been living this life. He's an embodiment of this, and he also has two books out. So Johnny, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jesse, good morning.
Good morning.
So Johnny, we're here because why, in your opinion?
Well, because of what has happened, what occurred. I don't realize, I don't even know how many years ago it was. Maybe it was 2 years ago, a year and a half
ago. But you had a life before that social media uproar.
Yeah. Before the social media uproar, I mean, look, I just to give you a little background, I'm a child of Arkansas, mm-hmm. Little Rock, Arkansas. That's where I grew up.
Little Rock, all right.
Yeah. I went to school in Arkansas until grad school. I went to Brandeis University, mm-hmm. right outside of Boston in Waltham. That's where I got my PhD from. I was in the military.
Yes. And share with folks your undergraduate college has a...
Yeah, that's a unique name.
It's a unique name.
It's a Southern Baptist school, Ouachita Baptist University.
Ouachita.
Yeah.
All right.
In Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
Arkadelphia.
Yeah. It's 60 miles south of Little Rock, mm-hmm. About maybe 20 miles south of Hot Springs, Arkansas. All right.
And yeah. So you were born in Little Rock?
No, I was born in Phoenix, Arizona, raised in Little Rock.
Raised in Little Rock. So raised in kind of the hub of one of the citadels of liberation as well. And you guys have a new mayor. I mean, Dottie Shackelford was appointed the first black female mayor, but you have a new fully elected black mayor in Little Rock. So continue.
Okay. So I was at Ouachita Baptist University, I had to sign up for the U.S. military because, mm-hmm. I had to get through school.
Yes.
So that's the only way I could pay through school, because I grew up very poor.
Mm-hmm.
Had six boys in the house, me included.
All right.
And my grandmother and my father and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first one to go to college, the first one to get any kind of degree, first one and the only one to get a PhD. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
I'm working on the A's. I haven't gotten all the.
Yeah. So my mom, she was concerned about me going to Ouachita Baptist University because, it was a Southern Baptist school, and those guys were notorious for being racist, straight out racist. And mm-hmm. it was a very racist situation. I stayed 5 years because I had to join ROTC.
Good.
And I became an officer in the military, and I was in the military for 18 years.
Okay, so we got to watch out, Jesse. He may still be undercover.
No, I'm not undercover.
That's what they all say. Johnny, jump again, you're listening to the Tom Ficklin Show. For radio, as you know, people kind of, they're driving, they're parking, they're at work, they can't really listen thoroughly. But Johnny Eric Williams is here with us, professor of sociology at Trinity College up in Hartford. You guys still say you're not in West Hartford. You're actually
It's in Hartford.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right.
There's nothing in West Hartford itself. St. Joseph.
Yeah, St. Joseph's.
Yeah.
And Jesse Turner, Central Connecticut State University. You have two books. So let's fast forward to your two books that are out.
All right. The first book I wrote was 2003. Came out. It's called African. I can't remember my own title of my own book, but anyways, African American Religion and the Civil Rights Movement in Arkansas.
African American Religion
and the Civil Rights Movement in Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
Yeah, 2003. Mm. Then I retrained to be very much a proficient at genetics. Mm-hmm. And so it took me about 10 years to do that after I got tenure at Trinity College.
Yes.
In 2003. And I brought another book out. It's called Decoding Racial Ideology in Genetics.
Mm.
Genomics, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second book. It's 2016. I'm working on a third book. It's called The Persistence of White Sociology. It's really white supremacy sociology. Mm-hmm. Sociology has its founding in the justification of the United States of slavery.
Mm, mm,
and so I'm doing that.
Mm. And again, this is the New Haven Independent and Paul Bass and Harry Draws and the rest of the crew here. The beauty of the show is that there are a variety of hosts, but we have a certain degree of freedom here on the show. So when you say white supremacy, we're not trying to cause people to take out their guns or their machetes or their or maybe we are, but the instigation, we're into the instigation of the mind, the instigation of the spirit, the instigation of you're really realizing that you're a historical agent wherever you might be listening to this or listening to it later. So you posted something on Facebook that it seemed to me that. Mm-hmm. Where if you swim in the ocean of white supremacy, then either you'll drown or you got to learn how to swim better. You got to learn how to surf.
Yeah, you know, first of all, most people in the United States have this kind of individual kind of understanding of what racism is. They'll say race, they won't say racism.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a definition of what I'm talking
great,
about.
Great.
Race is an ideology. It is made up. It's an invention, right? An invention. In the United States, that came to the fore around Bacon's Rebellion.
In 1780?
You know, 16-something.
Okay, right? In 1600s.
1664, something like that, Bacon's Rebellion.
Before, right.
And the reason I come to that was a rebellion was the indentured servants who, well, of all nationalities, there was no race then. That was just indentured servants.
That's right, Irish.
And it was, so it was, in our vernacular for the day, it's an interracial kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bacon was a white guy, and they rebelled.
Yes.
Against the torturous kind of reality of indentured servants. To.
Indeed.
And it scared the dickens out of people in Maryland and Virginia. And so what they decided to do was to divide and conquer.
Mm.
And they created then the category of perpetual slavery, right?
Chattel
slavery,
and
black
yes.
and white.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave the people who were indentured, who were from Europe, whiteness to create that kind of division.
Mm.
So if you go back and look at that history, most Americans are not proficient.
Bacon's Rebellion.
Yeah, most Americans are not proficient at accounting for the history, which is in the past, but it's lived to the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's within us. We breathe and live history even now. So so when I talk about white or whiteness is an ideology also, and white is basically it's this fictitious idea that there is a race of white people. There are no. They're basically people who imagine themselves to be white. They're not real, right? And so that got me into trouble on Facebook.
So Jesse's what? Jesse's just a human spirit?
He's just Jesse. He's a human being.
All right.
He's a human being.
Amen.
You know,
amen.
And
that's why we have
him
here. He's our token person.
And so the thing is that if you start to realize that you've been hoodwinked, that basically mm-hmm. You're walking around believing that these little superficial differences that we have are important, and they're not. They're only important because of something called white racism, systemic white racism, or what we know as white supremacy. And that's a system that's designed to make whiteness front and center and give it license and advantages to these people who think that they're white, and they're not white. Right? They're just human beings.
And not to put words in your mouth, but are you saying that even if you perceive yourself to be black or white today, for you to be able to express and endure your full humanity, you have to move beyond that self-definition?
Yeah, I mean, basically you have to, that definition, which, I mean, we're all blank slates when we're born. We learn that in a white supremacist society, that there's white, there's black, there's Latino, there's Asian, and so forth. These categories are made up for political purposes. They're social political groupings in order to basically justify the hierarchical kind of distribution of resources in our society. Mm-hmm. I'm white, I'm better, therefore I'm superior, I'm more knowledge, therefore I get more things, and so there's inequality, right? And but these things are structurally driven. They're put into place by policies and practices by the state, by institutions, and so forth.
State-sanctioned.
Right? So then when people think about racism, instead of thinking about individual, they should think about systems. Nobody is immune from the system's influence, right? Racism, white racism is omnipresent. Mm. We're all, you know, consumed.
Oh, yeah, I thought God was omnipresent, but you're suggesting that there's...
Yeah, this is a system that, it's a fundamental organizing principle of the United States.
Mm. And so how are you for, if I had you back on the show in 2021, 2022, even 2019, how could we measure people that are taking steps or evidence that we're moving away from this whole, these anachronistic, but yet oppressive operational issues in terms of more of a fulfilled society?
Look, I mean, there are these kinds of, you know, I can't remember Dr. King's, he's one of his lieutenants, but he dealt with logistics.
Yes.
He was a reverend and he came here, but he said something on, it was on, in the documentary, Your Eyes on the Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we thought when we got integration and so forth, that we're going to be free, liberating ourselves and so forth. But what happened in fact was that we were more securely fastened to the chains of oppression, right? Well, within our society, white supremacy, systemic white racism has this tendency to morph into ever more insidious forms, right? Mm. It's the same stuff, but it's just insidious kinds of forms. And so, say, for instance, when people talk about diversity, right? Well, what they mean by diversity in a white supremacist system is someone who believes the same thing I believe about, say, oppressed people. They just happen to be black, or they happen to be, but they operate in this fashion, right? And so, and then they come up with, you know, white supremacy has this way of coming up with terms to avoid talking about itself, the systemic white racism itself, like implicit bias, unconscious bias, all this other stuff, right? It's a bunch of malarkey, right? The reason I come up with malarkey is because they know full well what that whiteness is important.
Yes.
Everybody in this society knows that's the case, right?
Mm.
I mean, when people say, I want to send my kids to a good school, they're telling you they want to go send it to a white school with money, right?
Mm.
I mean, it's just these codes that they're using to avoid talking directly about it. Now, what can people do about that? It's simple. First, the first thing is to start the revolution in your head, realizing what it is that you're being hoodwinked. And that you got to change the way you think about the world.
Yes.
You need a radical restructuring of values, right? And then those values, the radical restructuring of values and the ways that we think will lead to radical restructions of actions and institutions, right? That's where we got to go, right? And have we done it in the United States? Not really. Okay, yeah, I'm here. You're here. I mean, we in predominantly white institutions and so forth. But the fact is that we adapting to those institutions. Those institutions are not adapting to us.
Indeed. I wore my white adaptive institution shirt today just to remind myself of that of that fact.
Choke Rosemary Halls.
1967, though. Yeah. Got to throw that in. So,
yeah. So
I've been indoctrinated for a few years and trying to kind of decide how I can swim on this stream of oppression. Jesse, yes, I want to turn to you in a second, but also share a word about because Johnny had a chance to speak to your TED Talks and you're having a conference in April, and the Moral Monday, I think, is having an event next Monday as well. So just kind of share how, in terms of what Johnny has mentioned, action steps and involvement and immersion among fellows that can help all of us with this mind revolution.
So Moral Mondays is always in this business. We've determined that you not only use your voice, but you use your body.
Mm.
So you turn up, you march, Black lives, we've got young black men and women being murdered across this country unarmed, and we know that every single day, and we fight that battle. So recently, we've just had a racial profiling discussion in Hartford, well attended, packed, and dealing with the tough issues. When I think about Johnny, Dr. Williams, what I see is someone who teaches the tough classes. Yes. See, I teach the literacy classes, indeed. So I teach teachers to say, "Hell, help the kids read," and it's kumbaya. And even if I want them to read the critical books, I don't take the critical. The piece that puts you in such an uncomfortable place that says, look in the mirror and realize there's a bit of the devil in all of us. Mm-hmm. Johnny's classes does do that. you leave his classes and you leave his classes woke. And I don't care what color you are. I know from colleagues that you're going to have a tough time in his class. You better perform. You better do. And you better participate. And you better speak up. And you better open. So that's a different kind of thing. And with the TED stuff, this year we find ourselves at odds. We're going to do a Defending the Arts TED Talk because we feel that in public education, music, art, play, and imagination for poor children, for black children, for brown children, for special education children, for urban children and poor rural children, we feel it's under attack. I mean, we seem to get it all for my daughter went to West Hartford schools. Hey, they had it there. But you know what? You're not getting much art anymore in urban schools and poor schools, and that's part of that white supremacy that Johnny's talking about. Yeah. We have a myth of equity, but in reality, we're the most unequitable system in the world.
And jumping back to the Moral Monday, I think you have an open house. Don't you have an event next Monday? Are you aware of you're having an open house, some event you're holding? I'll post it.
You post it.
There's information, and then so you're. And then lastly, Johnny, just before I come back to you, you're in the, is it April? You're
in April, in April. We pick our date after we have to wait to the end of the semester.
Okay.
And then events management will give us some days to choose from. But we're all work for the merchant ship. And so everybody we pick a day when nobody's buying the hall.
Excellent. Can you listen to the Tom Ficklin Show? And Johnny Eric Williams is with us, professor of sociology at Trinity. And Jesse Turner, professor at Central Connecticut State University. Johnny, let's jump to, we have roughly another 30 minutes, so we can still be deliberate and intentional. You mentioned genetics, and Dorothy Roberts has some stuff out in that regard, Harriet Washington has some stuff out, and we hear about these terms, artificial intelligence and genetics and CRISPR and the Japanese kind of, or the Chinese doctor or Chinese scientist that says that he's created a unique kind of baby using. So chat about that, because I don't think people realize that the same continuum of how the system manipulates you, how industries manipulate you, how we're actually now our own genome is being manipulated, and perhaps not to our best interest.
Yeah, I mean, my work itself deals with the fact that how do you conduct genetic research in an environment that is oppressive, with a system of oppression within it, with systems of oppression within it, gender oppression, racial oppression, class oppression. And what does that mean? And there's a long history with eugenics, which has transformed itself into genetics now.
Yes.
With these white supremacists walking around here talking about genes prove that they're better and superior and so forth. So that's one way it can be negative. But with the AI stuff, I mean, I heard that Google I know who else it was, maybe it was Yahoo, but they created this artificial intelligence. It created its own language to talk to itself, and they had to shut it down. So that scared them to death. So
indeed,
that's one. Indeed. So that becomes scary. I mean, and why do we need AI anyway? I mean, that's the question that one should ask. Mm-hmm. And why do we need to edit genes in the first place? What's the nature of that? And the guy who did it in China, that's his name. He is not a physician, right? He's a PhD, a physicist.
Yes.
And he did this.
Yes.
And he was, he got cracked down on because of what he did. The medical doctors in China said this was wrong.
Indeed.
Right. But then everybody else in the world kicked in and said it was wrong too. Because what he did was he edited for a particular gene. Now, we don't know how, say, editing a gene, you go in and you snip one of the proteins and so forth. It has then this kind of cascade effect throughout the whole genome. And we don't know how that works. And so it could be catastrophic. It could lead to some kind of bad behavior for the kid. I don't know.
Well, but, and to break it down, if that whether it's a male or a female, I haven't read that part, whether it's a male or a female, but if that person has progeny, and then it gets distributed through
epigenetics,
the total system. I mean, all right, so, and this is where the ethic, we hear the term ethics and morality are maybe just buzzwords, but there really is some, the reason we have words like ethics and morality through all of humankind is that there's sometimes there's a need to kind of stop and ponder what's really good for all of us. So, so you're saying that in terms of your academic experience and your life experience, that there are ominous threats. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there are ominous threats at the clouds of ominous kind of impact.
Well, threats
on
to
us.
Humanity. I mean, I don't get when people say save the planet. I mean, the planet is a living thing that gave rise to us. The planet would shake us off like a bunch of fleas.
Okay.
I mean, it'll be here, but we'll be gone.
The bacteria,
it's about really saving humanity, right? And so when we look at the things that are a threat to humanity, number one, for me, is the military-industrial complex, right? That's going to destroy us because we're selling weapons for people to kill each other with, and it's profitable for certain people in the United States. It's war profiteering.
Yes.
And then the next thing I would say is another threat to humanity is white supremacy, right? I mean, it's insidious and it's closely.
And you're not
linked.
Talking just about Trump or the U.S. version. You're talking about the global version.
Yes, the global. I mean, this is. I mean, I don't know how a scholar in this day and age, which we're globally connected, can only talk about the U.S. The U.S. is probably the biggest terrorist threat to the world because we refuse to even acknowledge, our government refused to even acknowledge the fact that we have a climate change problem, right? So it's about killing human beings and the things that live on the planet itself. That is the problem. So capitalism is one, military-industrial complex is second. And then white supremacy, heteropatriarchal capitalism itself is another one. So they all intertwine together and they maintain each other. Those are tremendous threats to humanity, which we must deal with, we must face. And the first place it's got to start is right up here, like I told you, with a radical restructuring of the way we think about the world, centering human beings rather than profit making. Right? Because right now, what we're centering is profit making over everything else, including life. And that's not the way to go.
So if we thought about that profit making over there, this oppression makes money. That's what it's about. So if we look at why was this slavery? It was because I can enslave a people to take their free labor.
No minimum wage. Huh?
Right. So doesn't everybody wonder what Africa would be like today if it was never raped and pillaged?
It's the richest continent.
Yeah. What would it be today? I mean, and we could do the same. We could go to Asia. We could go to South America. We could come to the New World when those three ships, you know, supposedly found the New World. I mean, robbed the New World, that kind of concept. But the stuff that Johnny talks about is the stuff that still puts you at risk because Johnny blogs, and Johnny just at the end of his blog just put a little tag on it. The next thing you know was Robert Cotto, a friend of ours, a mutual friend, emails me, say they closed down the whole university. They're coming after Johnny today, and it's because you speak a truth that threatens an economic system that oppresses millions. I mean, we shouldn't be. We want an economic system that works. It should be, if it doesn't lift all, then you can't do it.
So let's jump back to that episode of a few years ago, then Johnny, just for readers that aren't familiar, and you've had to recapitulate this scenario verbally a number of times, as well as the emotional impact of it is still resonant with you, and that's part of your DNA too.
Yeah,
what occurred. So this is not easy to talk about. But we know what happened to the professor at Temple and his kind of presentation.
Professor Hill,
to the United Nations more recently. But roughly 2 years ago, you shared some information through social media, and the university became aware of it. And you weren't tarred and feathered or hung up, but in previous years ago, you could have been.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, people don't understand this was. This was just another reflection of how what lynching 2016 lynching was all about. So you said something in the public domain that was perceived to be threatening to the powers that be. Do you still feel that those circumstances still dictated you to say what you said? Do you feel even more so now? Because from hearing you and seeing you in person today and reading about the event, and when I read about it, it was just a basic fundamental comment that you were sharing, mm-hmm. but it was took to be very threatening.
Well, there's a network of people who troll professors like me, okay. To see what we're saying, and they continue to do this. It's a network that was established by the Koch brothers, Charles Koch.
Okay.
It's called the donor network, the Koch donor network. And within that donor network, there are institutes like the Liberty Institute, which then has underneath it various college organizations that are designed, that they hire students. And now, not as much as students, but now others, right. who then the students find the information, they leak it to them, and then they write up information and misconstrue it in the way in which they want to whistle to their base, their racist rabbit base, to talk about a particular concern. Now, what I did was is just to simply share an article by a colleague and friend. He goes by the pseudonym Sana Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
That was talking about the Scalise thing that happened to him, and that the fact that there was a lesbian woman who saved his life, right? Yet this guy was heteronormative, homophobe, a racist, hated black people too, and misogynist too, hates women, and he hangs out, he piles around, as I used to say about Barack Obama, piles around with terrorists. Who were a domestic terrorist, white supremacist.
So you said.
And so what I said was, is I posted that without comment. Mm-hmm. Then a few days later, this guy in Minneapolis who shot Philando Castile was found not guilty and given $300,000 by the Minneapolis Police Department to go away.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's one. And then that same night that this, but the 2 days before that, 2 days after that happened, this woman in Seattle was shot. Charlene Lyles.
Mm-hmm.
She was pregnant, 4 months pregnant, and she had kids in the house who were young, and she thought she heard a burglar at her house, and she called the police to come and investigate. She came out to greet the police. She had a knife defense because she thought somebody was coming in her house, and they mistook her as the person who was the person. They shot her dead with her kids in the house, and she was pregnant and so forth. So I responded, and it was an emotional response, but it was also very, very rational and reasonable response. It was basic, like you said. All I said was, I'm fed up with these white supremacists, and that it's time for us to confront them.
Yes,
right. And then I used another hashtag, and I'm tired of them messing with Muslims every day, immigrants and so forth, and everything else. And there was a hashtag associated with Son of Baldwin, which I can't say on air.
Yes,
it had to do with Let Them Die. It was talking about whiteness and white supremacy, but it was misconstrued as saying white people should die, right? And I just told you throughout this segment what I mean by whiteness and what is white supremacy. Whiteness is an ideology, right? And it's not real. But yet you got people who wholesalely believe in the fact that the human beings are white and black, but they're not. They're just human beings, right? We all just on this earth together living. And we created these artificial kinds of barriers and borders, nationalities and borders and so forth, which should be abolished. It should be free human beings all around the planet without passports, right? But I mean, this idea that somehow we have this special part of Earth that we can own and stuff like that. So what happened was is that I got a call at my house. I was at home. It was summertime, from somebody from Real Clear Life Politics who asked me, what did I have to say about what some group calls itself the Campus Reform, which is a part of this donor network, had to say about, they said, you called for the killing of all white people. I was like, no, I never said anything like that. And then
Jesse if we did
exactly.
I'm gonna watch my back.
It trips me out because, I mean, the assumption is that these people think they know what you're talking about, but they have no clue. I mean, you can look at anything that they have written, even up to now, it's very loaded with misinformation. It's ignorance, right? It's just to spark violence.
So you're suggesting that there's a conservative right surveillance operation in play. Yeah. We were joking before we came on air about COINTELPRO, which we know was kind of official government sanctioned thing. But here you have private investors and philanthropists. And, you know, philanthropists is not always a good philanthropist. There's just philanthropists in general. You mentioned the Koch brothers. So you're suggesting that there's a mechanism to still spy on us.
Sure.
That we're not aware of.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking every day. I mean, they troll people anybody who is against the normativity, that is the normality of oppression, who challenge oppression, be it in the streets, be it on social media, be it in an academic journal, be it on TV, they're coming for you.
Mm. So for someone that is listening to this, that's working on their PhD program or an undergrad, thinking about applying to working on their doctorate and teaching, what do you say to them so that they won't feel intimidated or scared?
Well, first of all, I got this very kind of pessimist. If you look, the moment we're born, we start dying.
Okay. Well, okay. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I won't hold that
against you.
Okay. So for me, I mean, why would one be afraid? I mean, you can't live.
Well, in terms
you,
of the possible reprisals.
Yeah. But even the possible reprisals, I mean, the fact you got to do what you got to do. I mean, look, oppression ain't going to go away on its own. I mean, people who think that they're white are not going to get rid of oppression. It's going to be up to us to do that.
Say that again. Say that again.
People who think that they're white are not going to get rid of oppression. Okay? We got to do that. I mean, black folks got to do that. Latinos have to do that. People who have been racially defined as the other. Right? We got to get rid of that.
And Douglas had something to say about that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, he knew. Right? Yes, I mean, we come from this long tradition. It's not just Douglas, it's Henry Highland Garnett, Sojourner Truth, it's Harriet Tubman, right? Ida B. Wells Burnett, right? Fannie Lou Hamer in Mississippi, Audre Lorde. I mean, all these people, I mean, we come from that tradition. We lost our mind when Obama was elected, but, you know, we stopped doing what we were supposed to do to free ourselves. We thought that Negro was going to free us, but, you know, come on, you know. I mean, he's one of them, you know? So, for us, what's important is for us to come to terms with the fact that we, through our struggle, as Jesse said, it is through our struggle that we get a sense of our own empowerment to change the world.
Yes.
All you got to do is look at what's happening in France with the Yellow Vest movement.
Yes.
For France, you go to Egypt. What happened in Egypt, right? Before Egypt, you go to Tunisia, to Tunis to see what they did, right? Before that, you go to Chile and see what they did. I mean, Cuba, on and on and on. We've done this throughout our existence on this planet to get rid of these people who think that it's important to oppress people for profit, to take advantage of.
Again, you listen to the Tom Ficklin Show, and Johnny Eric Williams is with us, professor of sociology at Trinity, and a tenured professor, which is really great.
Full professor.
full professor. And, and Jesse Turner, professor at Central Connecticut State University. Johnny, in spite of your exercising your freedom of speech, you were slapped on the wrist a little bit. And did you were you in a position to legally challenge that administrative decision, or you just accepted?
Yes, I was in a position to challenge it, and I did challenge it.
Okay.
The Academic Freedom Committee of my college unanimously agreed with me that they had violated my academic freedom. Now, the thing is that on campus, it's about academic freedom, right? It's not about free speech. I'm an expert in this field.
Okay. Academic freedom. All right. Good.
And I said nothing that was inciting of violence or anything like that. It was misconstrued that way.
Yes.
And they had violated me by ruining my reputation.
Indeed.
By saying that I had done this, so forth. And so that needs to be a remedy. And they have to give me that.
So that's still pending then?
No, it's settled. I can't talk about it.
But you can't talk about it. From the smile on your face, I'm getting an opinion that the feeling that you were quasi satisfied.
Yeah, I'm satisfied with
remedy, and that's important about sticking to your gun, so to speak.
Well, you know, people can't admit. I mean, you know, what's really strange is to me is that people can't admit in these power positions that they messed up. And it's not a sign of weakness or anything like that. It's a sign that you're a human being that you can learn. But they can't say, "Oh, I'm sorry." I mean, the kinds of releases that the college released attacking me, you know, basically denigrating me, they can't even come back with, "I'm sorry." They can't give me that.
Jesse, I want to jump with Johnny to you're over in the Middle East last year.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Palestine.
In Palestine about 14 months ago, 12 months ago?
No, over the summer.
Over the summer, so yeah. I want to talk about that. But Johnny and Jesse, before we go there, you both are been immersed and you confront, not confront, but you commune with students often. Mm-hmm. What are you hearing or seeing from them or the challenges? What's going through their mind is they're that 18, 19, 20, 21 year old kind of vortex of psychic reality. And just, you know, I'm just curious what you share. Cause this, I'm not sure if we know about mental health being epidemic, not an epidemic, but many students encouraged being depressed or on this type of drug or that type of drug or mental mm-hmm. health issues needing counseling. But I guess one that was curious how they're being receptive, or are they bombarded? How do they process at their young brain development stage? This vortex that they're mm-hmm. and teachers too, how do teachers communicate it in a, mm-hmm. in an inspirational fashion rather than a, mm-hmm. Making it a down or depressing experience or pessimistic experience?
Well, we might want to look at how white supremacy infiltrates everything we do.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Johnny and I will get them when they're adults, but let's look at what they learned. Mm-hmm. They have not learned about Sojourner Truth. Mm-hmm. They have not learned about Frederick Douglass. Last week, we just enlightened the audience to say the first building name, government building named after an African-American, mm-hmm. Ebenezer Bassett, who is the hero of Hispaniola, a great humanitarian, a founder of one of the first historic black colleges, a renowned educator, our first graduate of Central State University, and we have to inform them. So mm-hmm. what I'm saying is, we're not studying history. When mm-hmm. we look at Greek history, is high truth. We're not studying the truth. We're studying something whitewashed, mm-hmm. and so K-12. And now, if you look at things like. Koch brothers are great supporters of the Common Core. Mm-hmm. What's the Common Core? Everything that would enable you to buy that racist crap. That's what that is. It takes away, it claims that knowledge is objective.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. Last week I was having a conversation with an educator from one of the urban districts, and I'm doing some stuff for them, and we had this conversation. She said, well, and we were talking about racism, and she said, well, you know, Jesse, whites are intellectual, and you know, blacks are emotional. And I said, "Wait, you telling me William Du Bois wasn't an intellectual? You're telling me that Booker T. Washington wasn't an intellectual? Is that what you're telling me? Are you telling me that Frederick Douglass wasn't an intellectual?" Yeah, and it. But what I'm saying, it permeates, mm-hmm. and if we don't start changing this early on, because I work at a university, the university is not supposed to sugar stamp the status quo. We are supposed to question it, question everything there is. And when you question things, then you can refine them, you can change them. But if you don't question anything, you'll be in the same boat sinking 20, 40 years from now.
Okay. So I would say that, Stephen Greg Wilder wrote a book called Ebony and Ivy.
Mm-hmm.
The foundation of the United States, universities have been about reinforcing oppression, right?
Right.
That's been its mission, and that's what they do, right? But also, there's another book by Henry Giroux called The University in Chains.
University in Chains.
Yeah, University in Chains, yeah. And so the university has been taken over by the Koch kind of brothers and so forth since the 1970s by making it dependent upon philanthropy to fund it for their endowments and so forth, and the defunding of public universities and so forth. Now, So the thing is that you're asking about the mental health of students. Well, first of all, it's hard when we get a student coming from that background. When we get a student coming from that background, what happens is that, they don't read, right? Because they don't see themselves in the curriculum, right? And even when they do see themselves, like when I'm teaching, it's hard to get students to read. What trips me out is that these guys, the Kochies, these right-wing people, say that we're indoctrinating the students. We can't even get these guys to read, right? That's one. Okay. How are you going to indoctrinate somebody who don't read and don't pay attention, don't talk in class, stuff like that? So next thing is that mental health-wise, look, if you go to a predominantly white institution, you don't have to even predominantly white. It could be a historically black one. You're going to have problems adjusting, because even historically black schools are about integrating into this oppressive system, not challenging it, integrating into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a few professors. Jesse may be at Central Connecticut State. I'm at Trinity College. I mean, there's only a handful of professors in the whole damn country who will actually challenge a student to think, right, critically about their world, independently about their world. That's few and far between. Most professors are rote learning, multiple choice, true, false, you know, regurgitate information. That's it.
You left me speechless. Let me ponder that, Johnny. Let me ponder that. Let me see if I can lift this up a second here. You're working on a book in terms of the I heard you reference earlier when we first started chatting. And again, you listen to the Tom Ficklin Show, and Johnny Eric Williams is with us, professor of sociology at Trinity, and Jesse Turner, professor at Central Connecticut State University. You referenced the sociology, I think, profession.
Yeah, sociology has been integral to justifying racial oppression in the United States. And that continues even to this day.
Mm-hmm. So your discipline, your brand,
mm-hmm.
your intellectual forefathers, you are saying,
yeah,
were
complicit. as I said, you know, and let me say this before I get to that. I mean, when I tell people this, I mean, I don't speak truth to people who are powerful. They don't really care what I say. They ignore me as long as it's not in their, if it's not in their interest, to hell with him. We're not going to reward him. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to get him out. We're going to punish him. The people who you want to talk to are the people who believe that they are powerless and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's my position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so my goal with the white supremacy book is to get PhDs that you asked about.
Yes.
Right. To get them to see that we have to come to terms with our past in order to deal with its continual residuals here in the present of the, you know, of sociology profession itself, because sociologists, there are people walking around calling themselves race scholars. I am a systemic white racism scholar, a critical one at that, right? Not a race scholar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a critical race scholar. I'm a critical white supremacist scholar, right? I mean, you need to name it for what it is to deal with that system, because when you talk about race and you stay only at a social construct, you leave it at the level of the attitude in the individual, and that's not where you want to be. The individual is important because that system is recreating that individual, but that individual through their practices are creating that system too, right? They're codependent on each other. You got to talk about both.
Good. Any questions for me, gentlemen? I mean, I feel like I've been cracking the whip on you guys.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I mean, most professors who have a critical understanding of the world, you can't find them on radios or you can't find them on TV. I mean, one of the world's foremost authorities who I was mentored by, I was his mentee, Noam Chomsky, you rarely find him on the United States on TV.
Yes. And so when you mention Noam, obviously, Democracy Now kind of gives him the platform, but again, that's not a mainstream kind of outlet.
I mean, who gonna watch that? Millions of people don't watch it. Yeah, but I mean, like, but he's preaching to the choir, though.
But so. your point is so well taken. So what do you recommend? We need to put our pennies together and kind of create our own institutional platform. I mean, there are people.
Yeah, and we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that. I mean, there are all kinds of things we can do. Put our pennies together to do that. But the thing is that who controls the airways, though? I mean, the airways are the people of the United States, not the FCCs.
Mm-hmm.
They're just guarding it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to get that, right? And who controls the internet? We do, not them.
Mm-hmm.
But they get us to think that they control it for business purposes and stuff like that. We created it with our tax money. It is ours. We should take it back. And we could just start up any of these local community radio stations, even have a national community radio station.
The Pacifica, something like the Pacifica years ago.
Yeah.
But let's jump, Johnny, to the global. You were recently in Palestine. You said 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, I was there in the summertime.
In the summertime, and it's been in the news since before Christ, Palestine kind of thing. But it's in the news again, and I'm just curious of why you were there and how did you find that to be kind of, if not inspirational, informative, and necessary for you to make that sojourn, and then maybe connect a little bit again with Mark Anthony Hill.
First of all, my experience with the Israeli, and I was probably one of the first people to use this term because I was in the anti-apartheid movement in Boston for South Africa. But the Israelis had this relationship with the apartheid regime, and they were supplying them with weapons and so forth. And then they were occupying territory in Palestine itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the connection, and I knew that Palestinians was suffering from this same kind of global, this oppression that we suffer from here.
Mm-hmm.
That our oppression is in the United States, be it heteropatriarchal, class, racial, is heavily linked to the global.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not just a local kind of phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
and that these are elites who are exploiting peoples of the world based on these phenomena, right? So I came to it that way. There was this rabbi who came to Brandeis University when I was a grad student, and he referred to Palestinians as dogs who should be pushed into the sea. Mm-hmm. His name is Meir Kahane,
mm-hmm.
who he was a rabbi. He was assassinated in New York by one of his followers
mm-hmm.
because he preached that kind of violence and so forth. But they created a group for him that was the offshoot of the Likud party with Sharon in Israel itself. And so the people who are in charge are those kinds of disciples of him who are rabid, racist, inhumane. They believe in something that among Jews they call Jewish supremacy. Whiteness is that thing. If you're not white European Jew, then you are less than. So they treat. They'll treat anybody who's Ashkenazi European Jewry
mm-hmm.
as being less than. Mm-hmm. Right? Ethiopian Jews, definitely. The Saharim Jews, the ones who are from Morocco and so forth, they're treated terribly and so forth. In Israel, that's tremendous segregation. There's laws of segregation in mm-hmm. Jim Crow and so mm-hmm. forth there.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to it that way. That's how I got to
yes.
it. Right? And I've been doing it ever since the boycott divestment movement started.
Yes.
Which is a civil call to boycott from Israel so they can stop the occupation. And it's wildly successful. And so I went with a group, and I was all over the West Bank.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was in Jerusalem, just kept going into the West Bank.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Couldn't go to Gaza, though. I would like to go to Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah. We have about a minute and a half. I want to give you guys the last word. And Jesse's heard this request before, and he's been a man of manifesting and fulfilling my request in terms of his third or fourth time sitting in the co-pilot seat. You are now publicly invited to return at your convenience. I know you're teaching this second. You're not as available next semester,
yeah.
But you know, the summertime, the fall, you can call in.
Okay.
It's just so important if the spirit moves you to help share. And I'm there's no doubt in my mind that people are benefiting greatly from hearing your voice and reading your books. As we conclude, and I want to give you the last word, Johnny, as well as Jesse, the two or three books again that people could be on the lookout for. It's a holiday season, perhaps purchase.
African American Religion, the Civil Rights Movement in Arkansas, and Decoding Racial Ideology and Genomics.
Okay,
and don't let the genomic stuff frighten you.
Well, yeah, for sure. Last word, Johnny.
Well, you know, I mean, look, I want to leave on a hopeful note. I mean,
okay.
I hope people know that that what I'm doing is about creating their empowerment.
Indeed.
Self-empowerment and collective empowerment.
Indeed.
To go and change the world.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be this way.
Okay.
And we can do something to change it. We just got to organize together and take control.
Indeed. And so much, there's a lot of literature about how participating in activities and movements and groups is good for the soul, good for the mm-hmm. spirit, keeps you healthy. It's mm-hmm. a healthy exercise. Jesse?
I would say simple, occupy. Occupy our unions. Johnny and I are AUP members.
Okay.
He's inspired us with academic freedom. And occupy our public schools, our public universities, occupy our courts, occupy our governments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is time.
Mm.
Let's imagine a better world. Mm. We can be more, do more, be better, but only if we turn up.
Mm.
So occupy, people.
Mm.
Occupy it all.
Mm. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank mm-hmm. you. It's been a pleasure. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you next Monday. Johnny, thank you.
Thank you.
Jesse, thank you. This has been
you.
Pleasant. This has been pleasant. I can't co-op the next hour because the mayor's coming in, so we'll make this happen again.
Okay.
All right.
On my mission, I'm going to roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going. Better go in the right direction. In the moment, you're stressing, but you're going to be counting blessings. And I know that for certain. Keep on working. Open curtains. Haters swerving because they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never going to give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, lights, camera, action, I'm ready to go. I'm never gonna give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Yeah, this is my road, lights, camera, action, I'm ready to go. For way too long, we face them storms. Now you gon' face the door you waiting for. I said from night to dawn, I write my wrongs alone. In competition with warnings, ice galore. Now I'm running toward it, my life to finish being a quitter. But little, little by little, they joking, telling some riddles. Now I'm in my section, ain't willing to give up. Though you getting knocked down, but you gotta get up. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, hey. Cause this is my road, let's camera action, I'm ready to go. I'm never gonna give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, hey. Yeah, this is my road, let's camera action, I'm ready to go. Shoulder, so baby, come ride with the soldier. Nah, nah, nah. I'ma take it down, down.